Hi, this is Steve Chandler, and I wanted to talk to you today, because you're a coach, about how to double your income as a coach. And I'll be covering a few ways that that occurs when I coach coaches. And I've had a track record up till now of helping coaches really break through in building their practice and their income. And it occurred to me, after coaching coaches one-on-one to do this, I would like to get 9 people who are already good coaches in their ability to coach people into a school that didn't focus on how to coach people, but focused only for 6 months on how to build your practice so it's strong, prosperous, something you're proud of, and something your clients actually look up to. So that's where we're going to go today. Listen and see if what I say rings a bell with you. Now, let's look at the concept of doubling. I stumbled upon this as a mental phenomenon years ago when I was coaching a young salesperson, and he was selling a certain amount of cars a month, and he was only improving by just a little bit each month. So he said, "Will you coach me?" And I did. I sat down with him and I said, "What would you have to do differently if you were going to double the amount of cars you sold?" And he said, "Well, you just don't understand. This is a hard business and people don't just double what they do. They improve." And he said, "So I'm selling about 6 cars a month and I would like to get to 8, maybe even 10. And I said, "That's great, so that would be fine, but you're going to think differently if you answer my question." I asked him to really seriously look at what his week would be like and what his average day would be like if he had to double his output, if it was absolutely necessary that they were going to take him away and put him in a cave forever if he didn't do it. And he said, "Well, if I had to, I guess I would do this and that." And he came up with a lot of really wonderful ideas, things he wouldn't have thought of while thinking about incremental improvement. And that's what happens to most people, is that they think about a little bit of an improvement here or there, or maybe I could raise my fee just a little bit, or maybe I could start coaching a different kind of thing, or maybe I could coach groups now and charge a little more, and little tiny improvements come in. But what I find is when people will actually open their mind to something incredible, something extraordinary, like if you had to start very quickly making twice what you're now making, what would you do differently? If you absolutely had to. Now, a lot of people say, "Well, if I absolutely had to, I would work twice as many hours. I would simply work 16 hours a day instead of 8. And, you know, that would work. And what would really happen is the first 2 or 3 16-hour days, you would start to find efficiencies and leverages and intuitive, innovative ways to do things that were really powerful and effective, things that you could delegate that you weren't delegating before, so that your time was spent only on things that produced income. And it would be the 80-20 rule, where 80% of your income comes from 20% of your activities. And almost everybody who looks at their calendar and schedule will admit that that's true. So if they had to, they would only do that 20% of activities, and the other stuff they would start to delegate or have other people do, so they could fill their day with productive activity. And that's really what we're going to do at the 6-month school for coaches, is we're going to reinvent and completely renovate how a day is constructed and how a week is constructed for a coach. That'll be step one. And it'll come out of the question, if I had to double the income and the revenue, what would I do and what could I do? And when we're going to work together, all 9 coaches are going to contribute, and they're going to say, "Here's one thing I have done that really worked for me. So we're going to get a lot of best practices in the doubling concept. And a lot of people ask, well, why don't people just on their own double things or think in terms of doubling? And most people don't want to do that. The mind likes to stay in homeostasis. In other words, it sort of protects the status quo all by itself, unless it's challenged. And when it's challenged, when somebody in a room full of people says to you, what would you do if you had to double your monthly income as a consultant, coach, public speaker, whatever you are, you would start thinking of things that you've never thought of, and you'd be thinking in ways you haven't thought in. And it's a really tremendous experience, the time that I've spent with individuals who have looked at their life this way. It's really opened things up for them, because in the past, in their own minds, they haven't even had permission from themselves to think in these ways. The ego will try to control the status quo and keep the human construct safe from anything dangerous, anything radical, anything new. But when you have a coach, or when you have a inspiring leader, or somebody who gets the best out of you, they won't look that way. They won't say, I bet you could be 10% better. They really do believe, and in fact know, you could be twice as good at what you're doing, and you know it too, you just haven't admitted it to yourself. Time management for coaches is a really key factor in whether their income just explodes or stays stuck. And the reason for that is, coaches are really time-oriented in how they work. Many of them bill by the hour. And in the six-month school, we're going to look at whether you want to continue billing by the hour and alternative ways of discussing that with clients, because there are better ways to bill. But even so, coaches mentally work by the hour or by the 45 minutes or by the half hour, even though my friend and partner Sam Beckford does 15-minute coaching sessions, and they're just amazingly productive. And I'll show you how that works as well. The time management issue for coaches is really vital, because there's only so many hours in the day that you can use to coach with. So it's not as if you can do 100 times more coaching hours in one day. But in certain ways, you actually can. And those ways will be looked at. The key thing is this. The number one way to have time management start to be really effective for you is to have the fees raised a bit. When your fees are raised, it really sorts out prospective clients faster. So you don't have a lot of clinging, high-maintenance clients that you're working with and that call with tons of questions and whose coaching sessions descend into therapy. Now, I talk to a lot of coaches who are really tired of the coaching profession at the end of the week because of these low-paying or medium-paying clients whose sessions wander all over the place. And then when you coach them again, they haven't made any real progress. And one of the great things that happens when you increase your fees is that the quality of client increases and you have more committed people, really ready to work, really ready to implement what you've created in the coaching session and go out there and put it to work. If I've paid my coach a great deal of money, and I myself have a coach, I have a coach that I pay $150,000 a year to. And I've signed a 4-year contract with him because I've had him as a coach over the last 10 years or so, off and on. Every year he coaches me, my income goes way through the roof. So it's worth the money to me. But I'll tell you something, when you write a check to somebody for $150,000 and he recommends something in that coaching session, you're going to go do it. And you're going to change your life, and you're going to listen hard, and you're never going to be late to a session, and you're going to take notes, and you're going to allow your life to be completely changed based on that fee, basically, because that's the value you now place on the service of coaching. So if my fees are irrationally low or modest, or in my mind thinking, well, I haven't coached for long, so I better start out small, or for whatever reason, if I think maybe if I keep them low, I'll get more clients and it'll be easier and the selling process won't be so stressful for me, we're going to completely phase all that thinking out in the six-month school. You're going to see how that can just go away and you don't have to deal with that anymore. Because higher fees, stronger fees, or more rational fees will actually do time management for you. It'll sort your life out. It'll make it simpler, cleaner, and bolder. And the key with a coach, I've found, in the coaches I've coached, is time management is not an issue of organization. It's not an issue of how you're going to organize your office and your files and how you're going to do your day planner and all of that, as most people believe. It's an issue of boldness. Time management is all about the courage to say no. And I don't mean a real nasty, disappointing no where people go away with hurt feelings. I mean a really good, strong, high-quality no, where people are deeply impressed with your no. No, thank you. No, that's not something I will do. And they are completely impressed with that. And they go away thinking, I'm going to use him or her as a coach. So we'll cover other time management elements, but that's the vital heart and soul of it. A, that the fees are so strong that it helps organize your day in and of itself. And second, that boldness come in at every point so that you're a role model for your clients on how to ruthlessly simplify your life, ruthlessly keep your life very simple and clean and clear, and you'll show your clients that that's what you do and they can do it too. For a coach, that's really so important. A coach can't afford to have a life of chaos, hangers-on, all kinds of scrambling, all kinds of wild marketing, on the internet all the time trying to search for new clients. That doesn't work. It doesn't work as well as a real bold approach that leads to referrals and new referral systems and a stronger practice. One thing I find when I am hired by a coach to coach that coach, that what has been missing in his life or her life, I've coached both his and her coaches, is accountability. And so the very fact that they now have a coach that they're going to talk to regularly and report back to on steps they've taken to grow their practice, that very fact grows their practice. And that's one of the reasons why in the six-month school that I do, I have put in 6 months of weekly accountability so that the coaches at the first 2 days of intensive work now have weekly reporting that they do. And that level of accountability alone changes how the mind looks at that week. If I know that I'm going to report my progress to you about something, anything, I'm now going to look throughout the week for ways in which I can make progress because I know I'll be reporting it. And I know the other 8 coaches will see my progress and I'll see theirs. And this is a wonderful thing because it keeps consciousness at a high level. Usually what happens is this. Someone is coaching, and their consciousness becomes very high during a coaching session. So they bring the best of themselves to their clients, and they keep changing clients' lives, and they keep transforming what occurs with a client, and it's really great work. And after the sessions, you know it, you've experienced it, I have, total exhaustion, total downtime, I don't want to think about anything. I just want to kind of veg out for a while and get ready for my next session because In each coaching session, we bring such a high level of attention and listening and consciousness, and we really listen for breakthrough potentials with our clients, that when it's over, we shut down a little bit and take care of ourselves and regroup, rejuvenate, and relax. Now, here's the problem with that. It's not a bad system. However, who's coaching the coach? In other words, who is making sure that I myself am having breakthroughs and seeing innovative ways to leverage what I do and maximize and optimize my own talent? Who's looking after that? And the answer is no one. The answer is there isn't really any accountability for that. There's no one I answer to because most coaches don't have a board of directors that they report to and say, well, in the past 30 days, here's what I've done to grow my practice. There isn't that kind of feedback or accountability, so the coach is on his own or her own to see that that happens. And at the end of the day, that usually has not happened. Now, the beautiful thing about having a project that we're going to do that has accountability in it is that by the end of the week, you have thought long and hard throughout the week about progress. What have I done? What bold proposal have I put out? What have I done in the way of delegation? How have my fees strengthened? What innovative way of serving an existing client has now been introduced and they're now paying me for? And I will report that at the end of the week for my project. And just having this changes consciousness of everything during the week. Someone calls you from a company that you coached a couple people at before, and you're listening from a different place. You're listening from, I could grow my practice dramatically if I played my cards right now. Instead of, oh, well, here's another company calling, and this is good. It might result in a client, might not. And most coaches I've talked to, if they aren't really being held accountable for growing their practice, simply don't grow it. They will get a call from a company saying, we've got a couple more people we're interested in having you coach. And they'll just say, well, okay, thank you. Give me their names. I'll see if I can chat them up and talk to them, and then I'll get back to you and send a little invoice over. We'll get rolling. Everything is just so mediocre and low-key and downtrodden that it really doesn't grow the practice. What needs to happen for a practice to become vibrant and vital is for that call to come in and for me to now say, I've got a whole new way of doing things that I'd like to talk to you about that I believe would benefit you and your company a great deal more than the way we've been doing business together. When do you have time on Friday that I can come by? So now I'm going over with a whole new proposal that's bolder, stronger, more long-term, and has a very nice retainer fee in it for me. And I report that on Friday, and bingo, it looks great and it feels great. I feel like a winner. And that is what's missing in most coaching practices. Accountability of any kind, not there. Now, there is one kind that I hear about, and that is coach goes home at night, talks to the spouse or the partner about what's going on, and kind of says, well, you know, it's looking good, I'm doing better, and time will tell, and experience helps, and you can't help but get a little better. And then at the end of the year, it's like, yeah, well, we did about 10%. I don't know why you're complaining. Of course, we can't afford everything you want, but we did 10% better, and there's really a sense of defensiveness in it. And a sense of burden and misery and, my gosh, why do I have to explain myself? It's so much better to have it be pure success accountability. And it really works for coaches. It's really the missing piece. A lot of coaching schools around the world that I've looked at their curriculum, they teach you how to coach. They teach you all kinds of systems for coaching people, and I'm not interested in that. I am much more interested in coaches in my school who already know that, but but now want to focus every moment of our time together on growing the practice. So the practice is stronger financially, the prosperity is great, and they're proud of it, and they're thriving on it, and they have a lot more freedom. Now, one of the great ways of growing a practice is to do less work, which is counterintuitive, but inside the school we'll explain how that paradox really works. If you have at least one designated day a week where you do no business, no coaching, nothing to grow your practice, and you're just away from work, and you're on vacation, and you're spending a great time with people you care about, or you're reading, or you're working out, or you're walking by the beach, or you're playing golf, you will be amazed at how that improves the other 4 days and makes them more prosperous and makes your whole practice more prosperous. Now, there's a reason for that. There is a certain level of esteem that a coach feels that gets transferred to a coaching prospect during a conversation. So, really, people don't pay you what they think you're worth. They pay you what you think you're worth by the way you live and the way you speak and the way you communicate with them. So if your fee is not strong and impressive in and of itself, that will cause you great problems in the long run, because there are huge self-esteem issues that come at play with fees. And there are issues that go so far and they're so pervasive that when you see them revealed in practice and worked in the school, you'll be really astounded at how deep this runs. Your fee structure is vital to the success of your coaching. It is powerful, it's vital to your practice, and contrary to what most people think, when fees are raised so that they're stronger, they do not lose business. Most people think, well, I'd lose so much business, it wouldn't be worth it. The answer is you don't, and you don't know that until you do it. But we will have so many good case histories to look at of where that did not happen. In fact, the opposite happened when people began to tune up their fees and strengthen their fees, because it had such a beautiful effect on their own self-esteem. So who they were for themselves was so different, and they were different people in the coaching relationship, and especially in that intake call, that very first introductory call where you're talking to a prospective client for coaching, speaking, or consulting. The higher fee changes who you are for them and who you are for yourself even more. We'll get into all the permutations for that, because we want to eliminate fear from any of these communications and replace it with an almost incredible, or almost bizarre, I'll say, relaxation. An almost otherworldly relaxation about money and fees, so that they're not an issue for you. They come very easily to you, and your focus is always on transformation and what you can give. The final thing I want to mention is, even though we call this CD and I call this whole concept How to Double Your Income as a Coach, the how-to is not as important as the want-to, or not even the want-to, but the decision-to. People making a decision to double their income as a coach or consultant or public speaker, that decision is the key. That's it right there. That changes everything. Now, here's the big myth out in the world. All the people I coach, companies, I coach Fortune 500 companies. I just finished coaching a Fortune 75 company last week. And I coach individuals. Here's the big thing they get wrong, even coaches that I coach. And that is, they believe that they have to know how to do something before they do it. And that's not really true. It stops so many people from doing so many great things because they say they don't know how to. I talk to business owners who would love to build a sales team of great people, and they tell me, I've always wanted to do that, but I don't know how to. I've always wanted to do something, but I don't know how to do it. And that's really not what's stopping them. You don't need to know how to do something to do it. And that's something that most people don't realize. For you to do something, you don't need to know how to. Now, I know that sounds somewhat bizarre, but it's absolutely true. When you decide and really decide that you're going to do something, the how-to is easily accessible. For example, when I have 9 coaches in a room and we're doing a school on how to double your income, the first step is a decision that I'm going to. Once you've decided you will and you're going to, then all the tips, techniques, proven methods, ideas, they're there. They're out there. There are so many coaches who have improved their income by much greater factors than doubling. And I've worked with them, and I've been one of them. My factor in coaching income is far greater than doubling over the years. But the key was not the things I learned how to do, although all those are in the school. The key is deciding to do it. People are stopped. You ask them, you're coaching them, how about this? Have you ever thought about doing this? Well, I've always wanted to do that, but I didn't know how to. And that's why they didn't do it. I had a person the other day who said, I've got this great product, and I don't know how to put the sales team together to run it. I just don't know how to do it, and it stopped me for about the last year. Well, the truth was, she didn't want to do it yet. And if we can see that, see, she wouldn't have had to know how to do it. That's not necessary. I have people contact me constantly who read my books, and they say, I want to be a public speaker. I think I've got a lot to say, and I think I'm really good, and I think I could make a lot of money. And the only thing missing is I don't know how to do it. So is there any way that I can find out how to do it? Well, you don't need to know how to do it if you want to do it. When I did it, I didn't know how to do it. I just made a decision, I'm doing this. And I began stumbling around and figuring this out and finding that out, and I did it. Anybody who really wants to do something doesn't need to know how to do it. And knowing how to do it is not what's stopping them. It's that they have not yet decided to do it. Now, let's give a final example of that. Let's say that somebody told you they would pay you $10 million if you ran a marathon a year from now. And you're not even a runner, but all you have to do is finish a marathon. Would you say, well, I don't know how to train for a marathon, so I'll have to decline your offer? Well, no, you don't know how to train for a marathon in a way that wouldn't injure you. But you know in the back of your mind that that will be easy to find out how to do. That there are so many thousands of people who know how to do it, you'll find that out. You've decided right now, yes, I'll run a marathon, I'll take the $10 million, even though I don't know how. Now, let's go a step further. What if we say the rule is you can't use anybody's knowledge on how to train? You can't even find knowledge on the internet or anything. You have to do that on your own, even though you don't know how. Well, a person would still run the marathon in a year because they'd figure out on their own how to train for it through trial and error. So they don't even have to access the internet, which we all have, or books, which we all have. Even if you can't access that, you can do what you decide to do. And that's the important part here. The how-to is never what's in the way. The want-to is what's in the way. The how-to is never what's missing. The want-to is what's missing. And I don't mean that in an accusatory way. I don't mean to say that clients I've worked with didn't have the desire. Here's really what it was. They had not yet made the decision. That's all it was. It's not like there's something missing in them, like they don't have the character or the willpower or the desire, or like some people say, the fire in the belly. They're not missing any of that. They simply haven't decided yet. But once you decide you're going to do anything powerful, like double your income from now on, once you decide, that's more than 50% of the battle. I'd say that's 90%. That decision alone.